It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Yeah! All right, college football weekend has begun. Actually, it started last night with Army and Temple. VTech Miami down here at Treasure Island. Up on the big screens in front of a 7-7 game. Miami laying this afternoon 17.5 in this one. Very early first quarter. Washington and Rutgers is coming up. I'm actually glad I'm here because I won't be able to watch the game. Like, I want to watch the game, but I won't be able to watch it as closely as I normally do. I'm not a fun person to be around. It's like, I have a lot of teams that I root for, but it's one of those that I get really annoyed. And sadly, Alex, I kind of reduced my craze with the Jets because they've just been so mediocre or bad for years that I don't really get worked up. But now that they have some hope, it's actually going to hurt me. Like, I was legitimately happy, which, as everyone knows, I'm a glass overflowing guy, but legitimately happy watching the Jets. And all, like, the simple things made me happy in the last game. I was like, my God, he can complete a pass underneath. He can go on the run and, like, simple passes. That wasn't even a freaking possibility last year with Zach Wilson. And you forget, like, even 80% of Aaron Rodgers, whatever he is now, is still pretty freaking good. So now I'm back on board on that. So the weekends are going to start getting intense again.
It's actually really funny because my co-host for Sports by the Book, Jeff Parles, big Jets fan, you know as well. And when we were watching not this last Sunday because they played on the Monday, this Sunday before, and he had to explain himself to me as well because he got super excited and was, like, cheering for something. He's like, sorry, I know that's not that big of a deal, but it is for us.
It was so, like, he threw a couple back shoulders, and I was like, oh, my God, that's possible? Wait, what? There's a guy open on a slant. He hit him in front of him. He caught. Okay. But Parles is different because Parles is a lot younger than I am. So he, like, the life hasn't been sucked out of him. I've had like 25 years of watching this nonsense, and I'm just so desensitized. But you know, in the end, when you're a sports fan, when your team has some hope, you get fired up again.
Absolutely. And I don't recommend that Broncos. Taking the points at the Broncos in that contest.
Yeah, well, we're in it together, so now you're like, don't do that.
I mean, you can do whatever you want. It is your pick, and I've already had one of mine.
Kenny talked me off it, too.
Yeah. If they wouldn't have just beat the Bucks outright, then it might be a good spot, and Sean Payton put something together. But now it's kind of, I don't know.
All right, on Sports Gambling with Kenny on Friday, and it's every day of the week. It's brought to you by Oasis Bar and Grill. On Decatur, south of Trop. Great local bar, great sports bar, rockin' menu, Reuben, French dip. I mean, it's like 5 pages long. It's dynamite, 24/7 breakfast, plus Monday Night Football's cool with Johnny and the Monday Night Maniacs. And they got specials every day for dinner. Tonight's special is of the shrimp theme. They've got shrimp tacos, and right now for dinner, they've also got shrimp scampi on top of linguine. You can follow them. Find out more about dinner specials and everything else on Instagram at Oasis Bar and Grill. And we're down there on Tuesdays doing shows from 3 to 6. All right, we're going to check in with a Browns expert and college football expert, Matt Fortuna, in just a couple minutes. But I wanted to ask you, one, because I care about what you do, too. You're down with South Point Studios. Are you involved with the PCL game tomorrow? What is going on, first of all?
So it is the PCL Championship, and I believe it is the third year that we've hosted at the Las Vegas ballpark. It's third or fourth, but I will be out there working. So 7:05 first pitch should be fun. Two good teams coming in to play. Anybody who's in Vegas, they should come out. It's great baseball.
And the stadium was rocking and rolling all season long. Great job of promotion, great specials.
Yes.
Maybe in some ways, the fact that the AAA club is tied to the A's brought a little more interest. I know people in Oakland who were really annoyed at the A's were very fired up to tweet AAA attendance.
Oh,
that was
yeah.
Where we're like, oh, AAA team's out drawing them.
Yes.
It's a little different. Let's bring in Matt Fortuna, who covers the Cleveland scene, covers the big-time college football voice as well. Matt's up with Alex White, Steve Cofield. Matt, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Very good. First of all, because I like to see this personally, I always love when I see people are venturing out and trying to do more podcasts and do more shows, and I'm trying to do that along with Terrestrial. So tell people where they can go to watch what you're doing in terms of podcasting.
Yeah, you can check us out on Big Play. You can follow me on Twitter, at MattFontaine83. We stream our shows every single morning on YouTube. We're on Twitch. We're across our brand new app, which people can download if you're in the Apple side of things. We do have a brand new app you can download. It's just called Big Play. And our shows are pretty vast and across there. But Twitter's our main one, so you can just follow me, at MattFontaine83, and I always retweet the show stream and the show feed there every morning.
Okay, I'm going to go off the beaten path because I know you're you know, good on college football and we want to get to the Browns, but I got to ask you because I really didn't have a chance to call around today and find out some information, which, by the way, is a lost art. When people see stories, call around and ask people locally. We're seeing Mountain West reports that the Mountain West Conference is reaching out to Texas State, reached out to Northern Illinois and Toledo. I feel like those are fixtures in the MAC. Is there a reason they would want to move?
I mean, the only thing would be is that I think the record is something like Northern Illinois and Toledo have won, I think it's like 11 of the last 13 or 13 of the last 15 MAC championships. Like, basically those two teams, you know, have dominated. We know what Northern Illinois did earlier this year. And I think they just have to ask themselves, would they ever see a way that they could make the college football playoff by winning the MAC? You know, now that we're to 12 teams, and I think we've seen crazier things that happen. You get undefeated UCF teams, you get undefeated, you know, power, you know, it's a group of five. Everybody talks about power of five versus group of five. The question is, would they ever take a group of five conference, MAC conference champion in the 12? I think, number one, they would have to do what Northern Illinois has already done. Beat a highly ranked team, beat a power of five team, and not just like, you know, the Illinois of the world of the Big Ten or something like that. Do what they did, knock off Notre Dame, but then run the table, which obviously they didn't, and that's already kind of been fumbled there. So that's, I think, the only way they do it. So they got to ask themselves, can they make it by playing through the MAC? I mean, yeah, you probably have a better option going through the Mountain West, but if I'm them, I would say probably just even from a monetary standpoint, from the legacy standpoint, everything, it's probably better to be the big fish in the small pond and stay in the MAC than it is to try to go out there and search and trying to find another conference. The thing too is they're just going to bail them, you know, Mountain West out. Why would you want to do that? They've got their own problems.
Cofield and Company with Matt Fontana on with us here. We're going to get to the Browns in a couple minutes. Alex White is here as well. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, while we're talking about college football, Matt, it should be a sin because we have not brought this game up in 2 hours, and it is Georgia-Alabama. I'm curious your thoughts of which way you're leaning here. Kalen DeBoer really gets his first chance as Alabama's head coach and his first test here with the Georgia Bulldogs coming in.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. You know, I caught a quote from Kirby Smart of ESPN. They do a tailgate series. Jonathan Zaslow handles that, and I've worked with Zaz on ESPN a lot. And he talked to Kirby, and he said, listen, we've faced Jalen Milroe before. You know, we've played in that stadium before. We've played against most of their starters before. The one thing we have not done is face Kalen DeBoer and face this coaching staff. So I'm leaning Georgia in the game. I think it's at this point of the season, you haven't heard too much about some of the big schools, Ohio State, you know, even Georgia, to a point Alabama, because they haven't had huge marquee games. Texas has already had one. You know, we know Notre Dame and all those other schools. So I think they're just kind of figuring things out. But when push comes to shove, I'm going to take Carson Beck over Jalen Milroe. I don't know about that for NFL perspective, or if I was in the draft, I might be doing a little bit different. For this game tomorrow, though, I'm going to lean Carson Beck. So for that reason, I would take Georgia. I know it's going to really be hard on the road, but it's also looking at it that both of these teams are set up very well to make the playoff. They're both probably going to be there. We could totally see a rematch again. So I think, again, they want to win this. It is a rivalry game, certainly very much so, but just I think it's taking a little sting out of it, knowing that in most other years, the loser of this probably would make it, and that's pretty much not going to be the case tomorrow.
Matt, give us a vibe around the Brown start to the season.
You know, it's been so hard because everything on this season was finally getting to an answer on Deshaun Watson, and we can't because number one, he's just been playing bad. Now his offensive line is completely decimated. Nobody in the NFL has been hit more times than him. He's been hit 57 times through three games. The second closest quarterback is at 29 through three games. So he's been hit a lot. He's been sacked a lot. And on top of it, yeah, he's not playing well. I want the Browns to win, certainly, but another part of that, and probably the most important thing outside of winning, is getting an answer if Deshaun Watson is going to be the franchise quarterback of the future, and that was paramount to find out. Now you have all these other variables in there, other people not playing well, he's not playing well, we're getting to a point where breaking down individual plays, as this whole week, it's been one play. There's one play on a cycle on social media where there was a wide-open tight end in the flat that Watson clutched, didn't throw, took a sack, and that ended up leading. You know, the Browns were down in the game, and it was a third or fourth down conversion that he didn't pick up. And everybody's screaming, why didn't you throw it to that guy? We had Watson coming out telling people they don't know what the play call was or they don't know how to watch film. You have Amari Cooper getting frustrated with the media yesterday. So it's been a tumultuous start. It really has. And, you know, thank goodness they got the one win against the Jags. Maybe that's not as good of a win as we thought it was at a point. But it's been hard. And I think the hardest thing is I have not taken any meaningful steps forward towards getting the answer of if Deshaun Watson is going to turn it around or not.
Talking about the offense a lot, and we know missing two offensive tacklers, and now tight end David Njoku is out. I want to talk about the defensive side, though, and what has gone wrong, because last year this was an elite defense, especially at home, and we just haven't seen that this year.
No, Myles Garrett tampered with feet, two different feet injuries at this point, and on top of Achilles and a thigh. He's still been pretty impactful, but they're missing a starting safety. Juan Thornhill is on IR. They lost a couple D tackles. The biggest story probably of the preseason was Michael Hall, their second-round draft pick. He's been placed on the commissioner's exempt list after there was a domestic violence situation. He was not charged in court, but he's still, or at least pleaded no contest to it. They've moved on in court, but he's still on the commissioner's exempt list, so he's not with the team. So it's a lot of the same bodies, but you go back to Jim Schwartz, who was the defense coordinator a year ago, and he loves baseball analogies, so I apologize, but I got to use his baseball analogies where he said, last year, all we threw was fastball. That's, we just did simple things, we just went straight forward, and that's what we did. And it led to them being the best defense in the NFL. He said this year they're going to start mixing in curveballs and changeups and maybe starting to get to second and third level type things to try to confuse offenses, and didn't work against Danny Dimes. It didn't really work against Dak Prescott in week one. The players are still there. There are a couple guys that are off to really slow starts, but the players are still there. I'll lean on that. I'll lean on Jim Schwartz just to get some things figured out. But, yeah, if the offense is going to continue to struggle as bad as they are, they're going to need this defense to play as well as they did last year if they have any hope of making the playoffs.
Let's go a little deep divey on the other side. I just want to know what your opinion is of the Raiders' offense, which was it's been a little up and down, and certainly right now they can't run the ball.
No, they can't run, and I really thought Zamir White was going to have a good year. You know, I was a big Josh Jacobs fan. I understand moving on from that. So I expected a lot out of Zamir White, but with the offensive line, I think as tough as it's been with now Thayer Munford's going to be out this weekend, which will be tough for them. And as far as the offense goes, not having Davante Adams on Sunday is a huge help, obviously, for the Browns. The Browns have three what should be top-level corners, but the top one is Denzel Ward. He's elite, and now he can be focused on Jacoby Myers if needed. Trey Turner's got a lot of speed. The one guy I think we're a little worried about here in Cleveland, and my producer is a big fan of Brock Bowers, and he kept telling me all day today, he goes, Brock Bowers, got to watch out for Brock Bowers. You got to watch out for Brock Bowers. So now that the offense has kind of taken a step back, I think that's the one to watch. I think for Browns fans, we certainly look at Gardner Minshew, who almost beat the Browns, pretty much had the Browns beat and on the ropes last year when he was in Indianapolis, almost single-handedly running in a couple of touchdowns. But some fluky things happened in that game. The Browns ended up getting a win. But, yeah, I would say going into that game, guys, for the Browns, I see the advantage, you know, for our defense versus their offense, and especially without Davante Adams. And I just really am going to wonder how much Myles Garrett, because I think it's going to be an interesting matchup with Colt Miller over there on the left side between him and Myles Garrett, but Myles is banged up. So, yeah, I do think this might be a low-scoring game just because there's going to be big pieces missing with Devontae Adams being out, not being able to run the football, plus the Browns' defense is better. And I could see the Raiders trying to stymie the Browns a little bit just because they've struggled on offense. So I kind of like a little bit of a low-scoring game maybe on Sunday.
What was the story this week? We need to expound on this one. Amari Cooper making some comments about the media?
Yeah, so it started yesterday, again, kind of all going back to the same thing. There was the play, and, you know, I'm sure you guys see it. There's a lot of people that break film down on Twitter, right? So there was a play that Jordan Akins, backup tight end, was wide open in the flat, and Watson didn't throw him to him. So then that got blown up all week about Watson didn't see him, or he did, but then he didn't throw it, and just basically how messed up Deshaun Watson is in playing. So the question was brought up to Amari Cooper about just the offensive struggles and Deshaun Watson. And Amari is the ultimate pro's pro. He is a very kind of quiet guy. And he wasn't being demonstrative in any way, but he was kind of looking at the media and saying, well, do people get on you when you ask bad questions? Or maybe you shouldn't come in front of the camera and ask questions because we're all in the, you know, out there and people scrutinize us. You know, maybe they should scrutinize you guys just as much. And he wasn't doing it, I think, so much to kind of be a jerk at taking pressure off. But it was interesting to hear that from a guy like Amari Cooper, because I never really expected that from him. But then we realized he had a bit of a contentious offseason where he held out of early offseason work mini camp because he wanted a new contract. And the best that he got was a restructured one-year deal, added some money to it. But Amari Cooper is over 30 as a wide receiver, and he does not have a contract for next year. So maybe that's starting to frustrate him on top of the fact that Deshaun Watson was not playing well. Now, Cooper had his best game of the season on Sunday against the Giants. But, yeah, that was an interesting one that kind of made me perk up about Amari Cooper. Just, and, again, I don't think he was taking a shot. It's not like he was yelling at anybody. But I think for Amari Cooper, that's about as frustrated as I think I've ever heard him here in Cleveland.
We're getting ready for Browns and Raiders coming up on Sunday over at the Owl. Cleveland's in town. Matt Fontana is breaking things down. Matt Fontana, 83, up on Twitter. Well, I just want to follow up. When you scan the media landscape in Cleveland, do you think there are a few people who are anti-Browns?
No, and, you know, it's funny I talk about it because there's the vast majority of people, you know, we're not like, you know, even Vegas, or we're not even like New York, where the vast majority of people that are out there, and I covered the Browns on a pretty full-time basis for about six seasons, so I know a lot of people out there, we're all Clevelanders. You know, so at the end of the day, we all started out as Browns fans. And I think things shift when you get into the media and you have to kind of put a little bit of a different hat on. But we all want to see the Browns win because we're all, A, starting out as Clevelanders. But I'll always talk about this too, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way. People are going to want to listen more. They want to read more. They want to have more interest when the team wins. You know, we've all been through losing streaks, and nobody wants to really turn the radio on or turn YouTube on to watch a show about the Browns when they lose. You know, one of the biggest shows that I've done at my time at Big Play was following the win over Jacksonville. Actually, it was the biggest show that we had done. So that tells you, in my opinion, all people need to know about it is that we all want the Browns to win. So, yeah, it can be hard because the media has got to report sometimes negative things, and they take it out of the media, when in reality sometimes you got to look at the team and go, well, they shouldn't give the media negative things to report on, which has basically been the story here for 20 years. But, no, I really, you know, I don't think Amari was out to get anybody or make anybody look bad. I just think that, you know, he's frustrated like a lot of people on that offense, and, you know, in a way also I think was trying to defend Deshaun Watson a little bit.
Matt, all offseason everybody talks about how good the AFC North is, how competitive they are, and now we have the Bengals who are 0-3, the Browns and the Ravens 1-2. Where are you right now with this division?
I think it's really, you still expect the Bengals to eventually kind of turn it around, but the problem is, at worst, or at best, I should say, they have dug them, I know they're 0-3, but they've dug themselves a two-game hole, right? A two-game hole to get back into the division, to get back even into the wild card. The only thing that really helps Cincinnati is their schedule. Now, Baltimore's a little bit different. Baltimore, and really the AFC North in general, all four teams had a very high strength of schedule coming into the season, mostly because all four of the teams were relatively decent last year and just how the schedule worked out. But Baltimore and the Browns have the two hardest of any of the teams in the AFC North. So for the Browns, who I picked as a wild card team, I think it's off to a, you know, obviously a tough one with that Giants loss, but at least without a division. You know, for the Ravens to lose to the Raiders like they did, which is a tiebreaker scenario, you know, potentially wild card, all that kind of stuff, I think that puts them really in a hole. Cincinnati's bailout is their schedule is not nearly as tough, so I picked them to win the division before the season. I don't feel so good about it just because that defense is horrendous and they can't stop anybody right now on that defensive side of it. I really thought this might be a down year for Baltimore. I still thought they were going to make – well, actually, you want to know what? I did pick them to miss the playoffs this year just because I just didn't know if they got enough help with Lamar Jackson, and I was not a big believer in the Derrick Henry signing there. I think eventually Pittsburgh's warts will get shown, you know, just from the quarterback play, and they're going to need Justin Fields to throw more. You know, I did some stat on my show today about that Justin Fields being 3-0, he's had the least amount of pass attempts, or the Steelers have had the least amount of pass attempts for a team to start 3-0 in like the past 8 years or 10 years or something like that. So I don't think it's real sustainable with Fields. So I guess if I was putting my money down, I would say I think Cincinnati will get back into it, maybe even still win the division. I think the Steelers eventually will fade. I'm not really buying the Ravens, and I think the Browns are kind of somewhere in the middle.
Last couple for Matt Fontana. In recent years, how have the Browns fans traveled? Because generally, Allegiant does get invaded by a lot of the enemy fans.
There will be a lot there. One of my very good friends is already there with his wife. They left yesterday. I know that there were some outlets in town that chartered planes, and there were there was a company, actually, that they, you know, with the Browns fans, and they said, hey, one price, you get the ticket, we'll do a tailgate, you get the flights, the hotels. So, again, like you said, I'm sure you're used to a lot of fans coming in, but there's going to be thousands. There's going to be a lot of Browns fans out there. And I also think, you know, for the Browns nation, not even just coming out of Cleveland, there's a lot of Browns fans out on the West Coast as well. So I'm sure that there's going to be quite a few coming in from California and things like that. So, yeah. I expect there to be a pretty heavy Browns contingent there for you guys on Sunday.
Yeah, we already have about four or five Browns bars here, so I'm sure all those locals are going to be out there cheering for the Browns. So, but Vegas is used to it. Vegas is used to it. And actually, when they built the stadium here, it was kind of the expectation, and that's how they pitched spending the money on it. Like, oh, you're going to bring all these people to town. So it's a good thing. It's not great for Raiders fans. It drives them freaking nuts, but oh well. Once again, before we get you out of here, tell people where they can find your show.
Yeah, no, and you can follow me on Twitter at MattFontana83. I retweet the stream for our show every single morning. You can follow the show individually if you want at MattFontanaShow. Download the Big Play app or check us out and subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's at MattFontanaShow.
Matt, we appreciate it. Thanks, man.
No problem, guys. Appreciate it.
There he is, Cleveland Insider, Matt Fontana. Alex is here. It's Cofield. About 7 minutes in, Washington, Rutgers, scoreless. Miami rolling up some yardage on the ground, 133 on the ground so far, but 14-7 lead for the Canes. And that one's got 3 minutes left in the first quarter. We're going to go out to – actually, I think he's here now. I was going to say we're going to go out to Fresno next and talk to Cam Worrell, who's part of the broadcast team on radio for the Bulldogs. I have no idea what the hell is going to happen in this game between the Browns and the Raiders. As a local talk show host, that should not be my take. I don't know because there's so many injured players. I don't know that Gardner Minshew can go back to basically what has been one and a half strong quarters in that Ravens game. And then the other thing that we got to at the end, that was a good question about the division. I don't think the Steelers are making the playoffs. Even though they're 3-0.
You don't?
I didn't pick the Ravens to make the playoffs. I think they're making it. I picked the Browns to win the division. Now I don't trust anything with Deshaun Watson. And I had the Bengals going to the Super Bowl. So I had no idea coming in. And I'm just throwing stuff against the wall. I'm like, I think this was the case now after three games. What did you think was going to happen in the division? Who was going to win?
The Ravens. I still had faith in the Ravens.
They're one and two. And I'm like, I kind of like them.
I like Pittsburgh too, though.
Really?
They are in my top 10 now. Their defense is really good.
That is good.
I mean, they definitely need to get some things figured out. I think they have, what, one or two passing touchdowns or in their three wins.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Can I tell you that I'd be more bullish on the Steelers if I knew that Russell Wilson is coming back soon, which no one in the country will say that because everyone's like, Russell Wilson sucks. I like Justin Fields. He still needs time to develop. I actually think they can be a legitimate team with a balanced offense and a guy you can really trust to throw in Russell Wilson, but we'll see when he's back.
I really want to see Russell Wilson's second try at a new place, right? It did not work out in Denver, clearly, but I don't think he is completely done. So I did want to see that. And with Tomlin, so I don't blame you for that at all.
This is a great place to hang out on a Friday night. I know a little later tonight, I'm going to be hanging out with our friends over at Ellis Island. One, I want to grab some of their Oktoberfest food. I think I'm going to go for the cheddar brats with sauerkraut and potato salad, the schnitzel with broccolini and mashed potatoes. No, it was a sausage platter, three specialty sausage with a bunch of other good stuff. It's literally, the list is crazy. Over there, they're doing a Friday night tailgate. So when you go to the Raiders games, you see David Perico up on that big stage with the Raiders house band. They're actually going to play Friday night starting at 10 o'clock at the front yard at Ellis Island. So I would go check that out. That's a big venue, but when you put a band in there, it's actually kind of a small venue. So I'm sure the sound's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
That's a good show. That starts up at 10 o'clock over in the front yard at Ellis Island.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Last 30 minutes or so here at TI Vegas. Alex White's here. It's Cofield. You know, I've never asked you, Griffin, are you playing all the fight songs when we bring on these schools, these experts?
Absolutely. We got to build up the hype for these matchups.
I think we got to ban that.
You think so?
Well, especially for the disloyal five who are bailing. Up theirs.
Up theirs, but then you build up the hype for UNLV to go in there and handle them the way that they need to be handled.
Yeah, I guess. I don't have, like, haunting memories of being at Fresno during the football games and hearing that. Basketball, you can hear it real clearly. Fresno State basketball is an amazing thing because they were in a good-sized arena back in the Tark days. They built a new arena that holds, like, 15,000. I've never been to a game, and I guess maybe it could be UNLV. I don't think that's the case because it's the same with everyone. I've never been to a game there where there was more than 1,500 fans in that building. So maybe that's another reason they all believe that the Pac-12 is going to be the glory land. So I would say of all the schools of Fresno, I guess they're the lowest on the scale of driving me nuts. There's an arrogance about San Diego State and Boise, which I've never really understood by either. And I was saying yesterday, this conference chaos stuff and the splintering of the conference, the sort of arrogance coming from the schools that are leaving, I don't really get it. And now all of a sudden, you know, UNLV is a real enemy. And now they're mad at UNLV for not going to the Pac-12 when they didn't want to be with them. That's why they went to the Pac-12.
Right.
It's so, like, fans turn into just weird, super over-the-top loyal beast about their program with this conference stuff. It's bizarro.
So you said there is some arrogance from the ones that are leaving?
I think two of them for sure. Yeah, I think two of them for sure. No, I don't think it was Fresno. I like the city of Fresno. I like their program. I love the brand of football they play. I like Cam Worrell, who's with us, who played there. Cam, how you doing?
What's going on, fellas?
Well, you know, we're kind of hashing through this crazy week of conference chaos.
Oh, man.
Then we got to get to the Sluka stuff in a little bit, but it's just weird, man. I don't think a lot of people say this about Fresno. I like it. I like going on road trips there. Every time I go there, I discover new stuff. Like, I'm legitimately sad that this conference is splintering and you guys are going over to the Pac-12. I'm sure for you guys that, hey, that's where you wanted to be, so it's a good thing. But I think it's sad to see the conference split up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. This was a very quality conference on the West Coast with a lot of quality football programs. I mean, it's really hard to win in the Mountain West. You have to face a lot of different offenses, defenses, very complex schemes, really high-quality coaching. And for this to be broken up with, you know, just kind of the trickle-down effect, we that started when the SEC expanded, and then SC and UCLA went to the Big Ten. Like, this is all trickled down from all of that, and it's really a sad and kind of disgusting state of college athletics right now. It's unfortunate that we're in this place because, you know, Fresno State and UNLV, they should play every single year. This is a rivalry game. It's a big time game, and to think that, you know, this is not going to be part of the schedule anymore, it's just sad.
Going back to when I was talking about different schools being kind of snooty, what does the Fresno State football fan base think of Boise?
We can't stand Boise State. We can't stand them. So it's actually a great rivalry. I love chopping it up with Boise State fans. I talk so much mess, you know, weeks of games after we win. It's fantastic, and I love those kind of rivalry settings that we have. San Diego State, UNLV, Boise, like, these are all fun rivalries. And look, after the game's over, like, I feel like everybody's like, okay, you know, we can hug it out, we can dap it up, everything's cool, it's just a game, and we can move on down the road. You know, but it's been long running, and there's definitely no love lost the week of a game with Boise State fans and Fresno State fans, for sure.
What do you think Fresno fans think about what's happened this week, where they had, I think they were pitched a grand plan that the Pac-12 was going to be close to a Power 5 conference, going to be a cross-the-country conference, go and steal UTSA and Memphis and South Florida and others, Tulane. Is there a little nervousness right now about what this conference is going to be?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there was a lot of excitement. Obviously, just as a Fresno State fan, you never thought that Fresno State and the Pac-12 would be associated with one another. Like, you just never thought that was a realistic possibility. So it was very exciting to hear when that came out that Fresno State was going to be a part of the Pac-12. But as things have developed, and, you know, I think like everybody else, we just kind of figured that UNLV, I was shocked that UNLV wasn't involved to begin with, you know, and then you hear everything that comes out, reasons why, all that. So it was a little bit surprising. But, you know, then you heard Tulane and Memphis and maybe USF and UConn, Gonzaga, like all of these possibilities. Yeah, so you're excited about what could happen. You know, UNLV could still come. And now that none of those things have happened, yeah, I think there's a lot of nervousness. I think nobody really knows what this conference will be. Is it better than the Mountain West? I don't know. The Mountain West is not done, I'm sure. They were pretty aggressive this week. So, you know, who knows? Like, we're playing a football game, which I think is the two best teams in the Mountain West Conference playing tomorrow at Allegiant Stadium. And that's, you know, it doesn't even make the storyboard, right? It's so far down because of everything else going on. Like, the game is almost, you know, not even secondary. It's down six spots from what we're really talking about. So we'll see. Yeah, but yeah, a lot of excitement to begin with, and now I think there's just a lot of unrest because nobody really knows what this thing's really going to look like.
Well, I think the games in recent times have been much about a couple of topics, angles on offense, and, you know, they've been close games. Fresno keeps winning them, though, 7-8-7 in the last 3 years. But to me, it's been about Fresno throwing all over the yard on UNLV, and especially when they really need it, they get it done. And then, I know you've talked about it, UNLV has been really physical in the run game the last 3 years, especially against that Fresno defense.
Yeah, if Fresno State doesn't stop the run tomorrow, they're not going to win the football game. Like, it's just that simple. And it's what Barry Odom has instilled here. It's the identity that they possess. They are a physical bunch. They're big up front. They have some backs that can tote it. Quarterback, even though it's not the guy that we've seen on film, the quarterback that will play tomorrow can tote it as well. So it's a big-time physical challenge for this Fresno State defense. And last year they didn't really respond to that challenge. You know, if UNLV doesn't drop a pass, they win that game in Fresno. And you know, Barry Odom has a big-time win. And in year one, they end up going to the Mountain West Championship and losing at home. But that was a game that UNLV outplayed Fresno State outside of, you know, some big plays that Fresno State had in the passing game. So if they don't answer the bell tomorrow physically, Fresno State defensively, UNLV will run them right out of Allegiant Stadium.
Cam, both these teams are coming in with pretty impressive resumes. UNLV just happened to be on the right side against Kansas and Houston. But, I mean, Fresno went to Michigan, and they were in that game till the fourth quarter. How much do you think that loss has helped them? Because now they've had three pretty impressive and easy wins since then.
Yeah, a big drop-off in competition, obviously. But, you know, they had a chance. They were first and 10, down a couple of scores against Michigan. First and goal, actually, inside the 10. If they just convert points there, it's a totally different game. You have 4 minutes to see if you can finish that one off. Instead, a pick six goes the other way. 30-10 doesn't look as competitive as that game really was. I mean, Michigan had one drive that they sustained and got in the end zone. So, you know, they gained a lot of confidence from that. I feel like they feel they can physically hang with anybody in the Mountain West Conference because they were able to hang with Michigan. Kind of wore them down one drive in the fourth quarter, but otherwise they were punch for punch with those guys. And it's not the same Michigan team that they were last year, but they're still a big physical Big Ten program that has recruited very well over the last 5 or 6 years. So yeah, they've taken a lot from that game, and I think they really feel that this game is pretty similar to that. It's going to be a big test for this defensive front seven physically to step up to. And now there's some explosive. UNLV's offense is far more explosive than Michigan's offense is. There's no question about that. There's some real challenges on the perimeter, too, if you single guys up, because you need more guys around the line of scrimmage. So it's going to be a little bit of a chess match. But I think the way they played and the way that they sustained playing physically on defense, I think they're pretty confident tomorrow going in that, they can answer the physical challenge against UNLV.
Former NFL player with the Bears, the Dolphins, the Jets, safety at Fresno State, now part of the broadcast team. Cam Warello is nice enough to join Cofield and Company on the eve of these UNLV Fresno games for as long as they last, right? So I want to go back. I'm going to go back there in a second. First, give me your overall grade. Is Mikey Keene playing as well as he can through four games?
I think he has been a little bit slow to get started this season. And like any quarterback, if he faces pressure and he's not comfortable in the pocket, he just tends to speed up just a little bit. He's just a little bit off target. He makes poor decisions with the football. And that's what we saw, against Michigan, a little bit against Sac State. He just didn't seem to really get comfortable. And I think against New Mexico State, against New Mexico, we're talking about a lower level of competition. The offensive line has started to play a little bit better. They've kept him clean, and he is not looking to escape when he gets a little bit of pressure. He's looking to step up. He's looking to find a place inside the pocket to continue to allow routes to develop and then deliver an accurate football. So, he started a little bit slower than I think everybody expected. He's returning. He has guys coming back. Malik Sherrod was supposed to be kind of the bell cow, but, was a little bit banged up to begin the season, which I think affected, Mikey a little bit as well. So, no, he hasn't played as well as he's capable of playing. But I think over the last couple of weeks, they really have kept him clean. And you start to see, the guy that we saw last year really dissecting defenses, really able to break down what he sees and deliver accurate balls. And, it's going to be a great test tomorrow to see. I think Fresno State has a pretty good group of receivers, and this UNLV secondary is the biggest test that they've faced since that Michigan game. And they had some, they had some wins against those Michigan corners who are pretty good. I'm really excited to see that matchup in the back seven when UNLV's on defense tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon.
Let's go back to the power game, and that is the O-line for UNLV against that defensive line for Fresno. I want you to talk about the personnel and also an update on Corey Foreman, who's in from USC. I mean, you're talking about a top 25 player in the class that year. What's he doing so far? And then how about the D-line in terms of stoutness against a run?
Yeah, I mean, Corey Foreman, you have some of those, and you guys know Ricky White, right? You have some of those Power 5 transfer guys that come in, and they just look different. They just move differently. And Corey Foreman's that guy. I think right now he's a little bit better suited to be a pass rush guy in passing situations. Still a little bit light to hold the edge, but Fresno State is probably the deepest front seven that I've seen since Judge Tefford returned in 2017. So they're a little bit younger in the interior of that defensive line. You know, Gabriel Lightfoot, still a young player, but very productive. Ebo Bridges, you know, preseason first team All Mountain West guy. He'll flash inside a little bit in passing situations, but he's that defensive end to hold up the end. Jayson Jacks, another, you know, kind of long body defensive end. So they've done a nice job against the run. You know, they wore down a bit against Michigan, you know, just because they have a couple of big backs and they're really big up front. But for the most part, you know, Jethro Franklin, who, you know, played in the NFL, one of the best defensive linemen ever put on a Fresno State uniform, he really coaches these guys up really well. And, you know, I'm so excited for this game. It's unfortunate that the story around this game has become what it's become with Luka and the Pac-12 and the Mountain West and all that, because these are two really good football teams who play a physical brand of football. And I tell you what, if you do not answer the bell tomorrow, you will get knocked out quickly. So, yeah, this defensive line, they're going to be ready to go for one of the biggest tests that they've had this season.
Yeah, it's a very weird spot for Fresno because they may be facing a lesser quarterback in Haj Malik Williams. I'm not sure that's even the truth. But what they are facing is a team that is really pissed off and ready to rally after what they believe, you know, was kind of a situation where they were done dirty and the guy was disloyal.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we talking to Pat Hill on the plane out here, you know, this is the type of thing that happens to a team that just galvanizes you. I've been in locker, obviously not this situation that I think is unique in the history of college football, but I've been in the locker room where you lose a guy or a guy walks out or something happens. Your organization trades a guy that you were expecting to be a big piece of your roster, and it just kind of fortifies you. So there's no doubt that UNLV is going to use all that energy tomorrow afternoon. Everything that's gone on, all the interviews they've had to do, all the questions they've had to answer, all the Pac-12 stuff, all of this noise that has gone on, and the fact that the leader of their team walked out on them, that, man, they're going to be fired up. I'm really curious to see what they look like in 2 weeks, right? Like, if this has a rebound effect and it takes them, you know, it might take a little bit for that to take effect. But tomorrow, man, these we talk about hair on fire guys. I feel like the entire Rebels team is going to be a hair on fire guy flying around the football field tomorrow, just because you have so much of that anger pent up, and this is the one place on planet Earth that you can go and let all of that go and people actually get excited when you do that.
Cam, you're great. We'll see you out of the game tomorrow. Thank you so much.
Oh, anytime, guys. Enjoy.
There he is. Cam Worrell, true Fresno State guy. We talking way too much about all the drama off the field. That gets you fired up. That gets you real fired up. And he's into the game. You know, Fresno has a healthy respect. They've won six in a row in the series, but a lot of these games have been really close. We'll come back, go into the grab bag, get you some score updates and college football is Alex White. Maybe give us a couple picks down the stretch here. Come on, Alex.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Wait a second. Maybe Alex was on the right side. I was trying to debate the expert from South Point Studios. She's in the gambling world. I'm not. VTech 21-14 against Miami. Woo. Getting 17.5. All right. I was wrong. And now that'll be a reverse jinx so that Miami scores 35 unanswered.
I was just going to say, it's only the second quarter.
Yeah. By the way, one note from the hurricane that we didn't mention today. You saw that App State and Liberty, which is essentially the best game on Liberty's schedule.
Yes.
Dumped. Not going to reschedule it.
Not going to reschedule it?
That was a note I read today, that there's no plans to reschedule it. That's big if that's true. I mean, first, the biggest thing is App State, you know, digging out from under horrific conditions after the hurricane blew through Boone. So not good right now. Anything of baseball interest this weekend?
Yes, actually, if the New York Yankees clinch tonight, tomorrow Paul Skenes is pitching against them. So I'd look at the Pirates price. If you're getting plus money with Paul Skenes.
I like it. I like it a lot. Thanks to T.I., Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar for housing the show today. Good job back controlling things. It's always wild and woolly. Griffin, nice job. Thanks to the folks here setting up the show. Vanessa and Colin. Alex, excellent job. I'll probably text you later on to finalize my Circa Million pick. We'll see you.